Friday, everybody. This is Lieutenant Miranda Fay. I'm usually behind the Instagram page and I answer all your guys' DMs, but I am now on the mic for the Women in Aviation Conference. I'm here in Orlando attending the full 3-day event. And it's been a great experience so far, and I've been able to talk to so many women across the Coast Guard and then across aviation industry in general. And today, I'm here with someone that I'm a huge fan of, and that is Miss Liz Booker.
Hey, Miranda. Hey. You got me. Liz Booker, retired Coast Guard commander, 65 pilot. Now, literary aviatrix promoting
the
books.
The literary aviatrix.
Promoting books that feature women in aviation with a website, podcast, author interview series, and a book club, a little book club of about 2,000 members. And we meet virtually a couple times a month, just having fun.
Yeah, it's definitely not a little book club, that's for sure. We'll get into that at the end. But yeah, I just wanted to start off. So normally we drink a beer on these podcasts. However, it is like 11 in the morning and both of us went to the Women Military Aviators social last night and had a great time.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So instead of beer today, I have my Starbucks coffee and water. So hopefully I don't sound too dehydrated on this.
I'm hydrating with the water too. And I also sound like I smoked a pack of cigarettes because I've been talking for 2 days.
Yeah, it's been quite the conference, but it was great. Yeah. I loved the Women Military Aviator Social last night. It was
incredible. The numbers now are just grown so much.
It's so much more even just from 2 years ago.
Well, and let me just tell you something about WMA. So I came to these, you know, obviously like 10, 15 years ago, and I would go to the WMA socials and I didn't appreciate what I was getting. And I also didn't understand what they were about. I just thought they were a drinking club, but actually those women were the women who went to Congress. They band together. The reason it was started was they band together to go to Congress to fight for the right for women to fly in combat. And which obviously the militaries brought them in. We were fortunate to be in a service that allowed women from the beginning to serve in any specialty. But they were limited, obviously, and it was an evolution. And WMA were critical in achieving the ability for those women to fly in combat and therefore progress in their careers. The other thing that they did for me that I didn't even appreciate back then is they brought in the women Air Force service pilots, the women who flew in World War II in the United States to ferry aircraft around the country while the men were off fighting, and also the Russian night witches. I met those ladies and I didn't even appreciate who they were or what they were, but those women flew in combat in World War II. And so we go to the flight suit social to have fun, but there's a real important historical meaning to that organization. It's just an honor to be able to continue to go to that and to see all the young people coming in.
For sure. And you can really tell that they're so passionate about it.
Absolutely.
All the, you know, more senior members are just really interacting with the younger generation.
They're
being
the
like
firsts. And those women are the firsts.
And they have never ever stopped trying to progress our, our cause. And it's been amazing to see that. Like, they are very adamant of like, what can we do for you right now? Because we're not in the fleet anymore. Yeah. How can we help you? And it's just so refreshing to know that the people came first are still have the same mission. You know, they've already fought so many hard battles and they're still trying to help us to this day.
And it teaches us a lesson, right? To continue to pay that forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's been one of the huge takeaways from WAI in general is that exact thing right there.
I hope so.
Yeah. It's been great.
It is. Yeah. That's great.
So this is a very 65 heavy podcast.
All
of us are 65 pilots, which is great. And you are as well. So any chance you have a great sea story or a SAR story you want to share with us?
You know, it's so funny when I get asked this on other podcasts, they're like, they all want it like this dramatic, life and death scenario. And I just, when it's your job, and if you don't have like some spectacular emergency or crazy storm that you're in,
right?
It's just a day at work, right? So I tend to tell the funnier ones. And one of the funny ones that I love to talk about is we got woken up in the middle of the night out of San Francisco to go on the coast. There was a surfer who had gotten himself stranded, of course, in a cove that was surrounded by cliffs. And so he couldn't really swim offshore to get to a boat. And the tide was coming in. And so he was going to be floating if we didn't hoist him up. And the situation was that we had to hover pretty close to like 150 feet, basically at the cliff line, and we're on MVGs. And of course, the the cars are driving by and like the red lights are lighting up our NVGs and I'm kind of cranky. My co-pilot was Greg Barbio. We called him Ox. And he keeps like, you know, when he turns his head, his lip light is like shining in my eye. And I'm like, turn your lip light off, Greg. And we're like, you know, finally get, it was an easy hoist because we had the land as the reference and everything. It was just, it had to be super steady, but that, you know, 150 feet below us. And we get the guy in the plane and he's in the back and he's like, hey, can you drop me off at my car? And we're like, no, dude, we're going to drop you off at Half Moon Bay at the airport and you can figure it out. And they, you know, had an ambulance waiting and everything. And we land. And so they're like, yeah, now it's like 3:30, 4:30 in the morning. I'm cranky. The mech is like in the back cleaning up the cabin. He's over at the ambulance and, the mech goes, oh shit, I forgot to get his info. And I'm like, okay, you clean up the cabin. I'll get out. So I get out, I walk over there. And so I'm standing there in my dry suit, you know, in my vest and with my helmet under my arm. And the guy, I'm like, hey, you know, I handed my kneeboard. I need your info, like your name, social, all that stuff, right? And he goes, are you a reporter? I'm like, you think a reporter got up at 3:30 in the morning to come hoist your ass up? Like, what? No, I'm the pilot who got up at 3:30 in the morning to come get your dumb ass out of trouble.
Sometimes they will just jump to like the most crazy conclusion because like, really? They can't believe that we are the pilots.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like with my hair, you know, over my shoulder. Yeah. No. Yeah. What?
Classic.
The dumb things people say to you as a woman.
Absolutely. Yeah. We had a contractor. I was sitting there talking to him in my flight suit. And like at work in my flight suit. Yeah. And he's like, that is so nice that they let you dress up like a pilot. And I was like,
sister, I have heard this story a thousand times now. Like the women, like
it was crazy.
What has been really interesting in this experience is like, first of all, the book club, obviously we get, honestly, like the book club conversations, the book really is just an icebreaker to get us to talk about our stories. And then obviously a lot of the books that I've done are with airline pilots. And so I get to hear like what they go through. They roll up to the gate and even the female gate agents are treating them like they're a flight attendant.
Yes.
And they've got their captain bars on, you know,
congressman that they were talking about the Airline Pilots Association and she had introduced herself as a Delta Airline Pilots Association.
No, he did that. That was a power play. That was intentional. He was trying to throw her back.
She handled that so well. Of course just she straight did, with the facts. It was incredible.
So here's the thing. Like since I got out and I do like talks at events and talk to younger women who are in aviation, here's what I say. People are going to say some stupid stuff to you. Now, sometimes that comes out of ignorance and an innocent, honest, or like a cognitive dissonance because they haven't seen anyone like you before. And so it's an opportunity to educate them. So like if somebody says something like, oh, I've never seen a female pilot before. I was like, well, of course you haven't, you know, we're 100+ years into this thing and we're still only 5%.
Right.
And I don't know where we are in the Coast Guard anymore, but we were 8%.
I heard we're about 19% was the last statistic I read. And then
19%. Go girls.
Yeah. And then in flight school right now, it's 24%, which I was like, that is incredible.
Amazing. So I think one year when I was in the detailer shop, we were up to 20% in flight school. And I was like, oh my God, this is blowing my mind. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, we're getting there. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Slowly but surely. Yes.
No, that's amazing. That's a great number, everybody. Good job, Coast Guard, because like the highest percentage in the world right now is India with 12%. So,
oh, wow.
So good on you.
That's awesome. That's great. We're doing great.
Yeah. But so when I go and talk to people about this, there's the innocent, and if you're in a uniform and you need to be professional, you just take it as an opportunity to educate them on why they haven't seen it and say, but I'm trying to change that. So go home and tell all the women that you know, all the little girls that you see that they can be a pilot too.
Yes.
There are also nasty people in the world who say things to you to throw you off your game.
Of course.
And it can happen at the worst time, like you're on a SAR case or you're getting ready for a check ride and somebody's going to say something stupid to you. And the problem is that we carry that with us. And 20 years later, we're still being like, oh, I should have said this. I should have said that, you know, and that guy or whoever said that stupid thing to you, they don't think about you or yeah. what they said. They don't know. They don't care.
And in that situation, it was actually wonderful because the guys that I work with happened to overhear that. And I didn't have to say a word. They...
You go, guys.
Yeah, shout out Matt Kruger. He took care of that. And I didn't say a word. I just sat there. And he's like... what did you just say? And really just called him out and being
a little peer correction is
exactly. And so I was like, I don't even have to say anything. I'm just sitting here and
not that we need you to step in, like we can take care of ourselves, but like, thank you for being an ally.
Exactly.
Step
I didn't have to say
correct
anything.
Correct your peers.
Yeah, it was
That's
great.
Wonderful. Yeah. Don't let them act like that. But also like for the ladies out there, just be prepared with a couple of comebacks so that you can offload that immediately.
For
and
sure.
don't have to carry it with you forever. Just standard responses, you know, just have some, be ready to go. Think about like if somebody said something stupid to you, what would your comeback be and be ready for that and just shed that real quick.
Yeah. And you'll always find it's never the people that are currently serving or in that are the ones saying it to you. It's always somebody that's never done your job before, never been in your shoes before.
Is that true now? Because that wasn't necessarily the case when I was in.
Unfortunately, that is a true now.
Okay.
That's true now is I don't
Wonderful.
Experience that. It's always the people that are on the outside that
so
have
for
never
me,
been
it was,
in my job.
It was the opposite. It was the people who I was actually having to work with that were
really?
The worst. Yeah.
So well, I'm sorry that was your experience. I'm glad to hear that we've made a little bit of progress and I can't speak for everyone, but in my experience, that's been the case of it's been somebody that's never been in my shoes before or in my job before saying something that they know nothing about and they like to be heard. So
It's
an interesting one.
But to the original point that you're talking about that congressman, some people are going to do that intentionally to throw you off your game.
For sure.
It's a power play. So don't give them that power.
Exactly.
And that's what she did. She did not give that guy any power.
For sure. Yeah. She handled it very well. I was very, very impressed with that one. Like she couldn't be rattled and it was great.
Yep.
It was cool.
Yeah.
It was cool to see that.
Inspiring.
So now that we heard about your, interesting star case, tell me about a little bit about your career. How did you start out? And then how did you get to full retirement?
Okay. So I always wanted to be a pilot. I knew when I was 5 years old that that's what I wanted to do. But I took some detours as a teenager. And I ended up dropping out of high school. At some point, I had been in Navy Junior ROTC. And so I got to a point where I wasn't living at home. I kind of was out of money. And I was like, maybe I need to do something. And I did. I wanted to do something. Like I wanted to, at the end of the day, I wanted to feel like I had done something of service. And so I called the Navy recruiter and did the ASVAB and all that stuff. But unfortunately, it was the end of the first Gulf War and the other services were not taking GEDs. So GEDs are a valve that they use. And sometimes they take them, sometimes they don't, depending on the service need. And the Navy recruiter very kindly set me up with an appointment with the Coast Guard recruiter. And I walked in the office and I saw the 65, a picture of the 65 on the wall. And I knew enough to know that as an enlisted person, I wouldn't be able to fly as a pilot, but I saw, you know, this guy hanging off the cable at the bottom of the helicopter. And I said to the recruiter, I was like, can I do that? And he was like, yeah, sure. Sign here. And so I go off to boot camp and back then they had like these green belts that you had to get off and you had to memorize all this stuff, right?
Right.
Not as much as you would have to do at the academy, but all this stuff. And so I slapped the bulkhead outside my company commander's office and rattled off my stuff. And he asked me what I wanted to do in the Coast Guard. And I said, I want to be a rescue swimmer. And he put me in the push-up position and like cranked me until I was flat on my face. And he was like, do you understand that the AST rate is not only like the most physically demanding rate, but you're going to be like out in the water in the middle of the night and stuff like that. And he was like, do you still want to be an AST? And I was like, well, that's how easy it was. It wasn't even like the strength, the thing that scared me away. It was the being out in the water. I'm terrified of the ocean. Out in the water. I was in the Coast Guard for 28 years and I'm terrified of the ocean. I'm not going to do that. So I became a quartermaster. I went to a buoy tender first and scraped the barnacles off the buoys. And then, knew immediately. I looked up at the bridge and I was like, what are those guys doing? How do I become an officer? And so I became a quartermaster, went to the Seneca for 2.5 years and then got picked up for OCS. And I finished second in my OCS class. I think 6 of us applied for flight school. At the time, I was on paper a single parent, and 4 other people were selected for flight school besides me. I found out later, because I was a single parent, and they thought I was high risk to send to flight school. Nobody bothered to call me or ask me.
Yeah.
So they selected 4 other people who finished behind me in the class, and 3 of those dropped out of flight school. So, but I can't complain. I went to Port Angeles as an ensign. I was the assistant surface operations officer, and I got to work alongside a really lovely man, Lieutenant Tom Nelson, at the time, who, anybody who knows, we lost him, the 6505. So that was a wonderful year. And then I went to flight school from there. First operational unit was San Francisco. And then second operational unit was Miami. While I was at Miami, I decided to go ahead and finish my bachelor's degree finally. So I was like almost an 04 and went to American Military University online and wrapped that up, and then applied for the Coast Guard's master's degree programs. Got picked up for the MPA program, did the Harvard Kennedy School program, came out of there and was the detailer for 2 years, went to Los Angeles as the operations officer. And from there, I went to JIATF South, Joint Interagency Task Force South, where I was the targeting chief for all of the counter-narcotics operations in the Eastern Pacific and Caribbean. And one of the things that I always wanted to do was do something foreign service. So what I failed to mention earlier is that I wrote my mom a letter from boot camp to tell her that I joined the Coast Guard. And she wrote me back and said how proud she was of me, and that my grandmother, her mother, had been a SPAR during World War II. And she worked at the Marine Safety Office in Galveston. And my grandfather went to register his boat, and that's how they met.
Oh my goodness. And had you known any of this?
I did not know any of this.
Wow.
My grandmother went on to be a foreign service officer and worked overseas. And I don't know if it was that influence or if it was just in me, because I remembered in high school, like, I was considering like international business and stuff like that. I wanted to travel. And so one of the goals I had, in fact, in my Harvard application, I wrote that one of my goals was to do like a foreign job. So I got that opportunity. I was the senior defense official to Barbados in the Eastern Caribbean. And that's where I wrapped up my career. I was sitting on the beach drinking rum punch, and I was a little bit, but that was a really demanding job. It turned out to be really rewarding, enriching, and challenging for me. I got to work at a U.S. embassy in like a diverse environment. I got to work with the chiefs of police and defense in 7 island nations in the Eastern Caribbean.
Wow.
I was very honored to do that. And it was also really special because all of the senior staff in the embassy were women, and I had never had that experience. And the first day that I was there, the ambassador, she was adorable and sweet and brilliant and accomplished. And she had this really sweet, high-pitched voice. And she's like, "We want chicks in charge." And let me tell you how many times I heard that in my career. Once.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I just was like, I sat at a table during hurricane recovery operations in 2017. I sat at a table with all of the senior representatives, like the either charge d'affaires or ambassadors from their countries, from like Canada. There was where else? The UK, our country, this table, they were all women. I was at the big kids table and everybody was women.
Wow.
And all the backbenchers were men. And it was like, did I step through the looking glass? Like, where am I right now?
For sure.
So it just was a great experience. It was a great way to end a wonderful career. I went way farther than I ever thought I would.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's an incredible story, honestly, for to go through so far and then now to continue on. And you had your education that you then continued on into this next phase of life of the literary aviatrix. There we go. Yeah. So that's an incredible story. That's awesome. So you're here as well for the Authors Connect. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. When I retired, so while I was still on active duty, I got a Master of Fine Arts in Writing for Children and Young Adults. I used the rest of my GI Bill for that because I was prior enlisted. But I retired in 2019 to write full time. And I started kind of, I was like so regimented about it. I was up at 0500 every morning, went to the gym, got everybody out the doors, and then I had the house to myself to write. Like that was the plan.
Oh, wow.
My husband worked out of the house for 12 years and followed me around. And we moved back to where his office was so that he could then go to the office and I could work at home and have it to myself. And then of course COVID happened. And so I was really kind of wanting to reconnect with aviation in like general aviation to kind of help fuel my passion and my creativity around writing books that feature women who learn how to fly. And I was really feeling isolated, right? Like everybody was. And just kind of like you guys did starting this podcast, I started a book club and asked if people wanted to talk about books that feature women in aviation. And the response was overwhelming. I had 600 members in the first week and 1,200 members in the first month. And I was like, oh, I've found some sort of need here. And I just ran with it. And part of that was getting the word out with Women in Aviation International that I had started this thing. And while I was on active duty as the detailer, I would sit on panels when I would come here, like women military work-life balance panels is what they called them. And I would notice that as the Coast Guard person on the panel, I was really the only woman who still had an opportunity to go fly operationally who also had children. And so I started writing cover articles for the magazine to highlight the Coast Guard as an employer of choice.
Oh, nice.
So I wrote one about Coast Guard moms. I wrote one about women in command because there was a very special year when we had five air stations that had female COs. And so I wrote about them and highlighted them. And then I wrote about the aviation survival technicians. At the time, there were still three on active duty, and I wrote about them. And so I had a relationship with WAI, also because I helped formalize the Coast Guard's relationship with the organization and the detailer shop. And so I called up the editor, and I was like, hey, I used to write articles for you. Would you be okay for me to do a feature about this book club that I've started? And that has turned into a very robust relationship that I've been writing a column in for their magazine, reviewing books, and then supporting the authors. The staff at WAI are so understaffed and so overworked. And I just saw an opportunity to help pick up part of the load by managing the author's booth here. And so that's kind of what I do.
That's amazing. Yeah, I remember in 2020, I was new to my unit. So mm-hmm. It was my first Coast Guard unit and then kind of the world shut down. So I'd been there for a year. You have like some roots, but you know, you don't have enough. Like, yeah. And then the world shuts down. We were on, you know, different shifts. So I was only seeing the same people all the time. So it was kind of a time where, you know, we had a lot of free time, but a lot of downtime where I didn't feel connected to the wardroom as close as I do now or prior to COVID, just by nature of the work shifts that we were doing. And so I got added to the book club on Facebook, and I was like, oh, this is perfect. And I think it was that very first week because it was all pretty new. And I was like, this is amazing. And I immediately sent it out to all of my other Coast Guard aviator friends. And I was just like, this is exactly what I'm looking for. And so I think you, intentionally or not, got the exact right time for it to really take off. And it's been very fun to follow along with.
Yeah. And I'm like, that's great, Miranda. I didn't know that. That's so fun. Thank you so much for the support.
Of course. Yeah. I thank you for this because I love to read. Huge book nerd. And so getting to read about the people that came before, fictional stories, actual real life stories, it's just incredible to be able to feel like you are, I don't know. Sometimes you feel like in aviation in general, as a woman, you're this very, very small, like blip on the screen of aviation in general. And you have all these stories that come out that you can read and be like, man, this is more than, you know, I am part of something bigger than just myself. And, you know, it's been amazing. And then I can pass those books on to, you know, friends that come along and all that stuff as well. It really just drives home the point of what it is we do every day.
Oh, Miranda, you're going to make me cry. Oh.
was not the intent. It was great. It was fantastic for me, you know, and it came about at the exact time that I needed it. So that was awesome.
Oh my gosh. So much good has come out of this. I love everything you just said. You know, I used to come to WAI and go home with a suitcase full of books, but I was not as, I also had kids at home and I was just like, you know, just churning. So I had all these books, but I didn't really have time to read them. And so you're just so much farther ahead than I was in appreciating these things because I just didn't have time. I didn't know all these stories.
I have a niece, Emma, and my whole goal in life is that she knows that she can do whatever she wants. And so I have bought her almost every single like aviation kids book in general or Coast Guard book in general, because I want to make sure that she knows that. And so, yeah, it's kind of fun.
That's amazing. Yeah. You got to nurture the young ones.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, that's there's so much to talk about here. First of all, when I went looking for books, okay. We have a book club with 1,200 members. How are we going to make decisions? And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be the commander and make the decisions for everyone. This isn't going to be a vote. So I just was like, the best way, the most organized way to do this is for me to curate a list, a monthly list for us to read. And so I started trying to dig into Amazon and find what books were available. I wanted to do, you know, diverse genres, types of flying, periods of history. And so I went digging, and what I found was, first of all, there were so many books that blew my mind. And second of all, that they were really hard to find on Amazon. Like some of the best books that even came out that year were buried on page like 50 of an 80 page search when you typed in like women pilots. And I was like, this will not do. And so I'm going to make a website so that it can serve as a central source for people to find those books. And today that's the Literary Aviatrix website. So there's over 600 books on the market that feature women in aviation. You can go to the website and you can sort on genre. You can sort, you know, fiction, nonfiction types of flying, World War II, whatever. So it is, I hope, and I think is a great resource. The other thing that you mentioned is like giving the books to the kids. And really, like, I got a Master of Fine Arts in writing for children and young adults. So yes, I do cover a lot of adult books, obviously, so because it's a book club. But my passion is about inspiring young girls and adolescents to want to join us in aviation. And so one of the things that I do locally in South Florida is I go to outreach events. And we always talk about how we're promoting STEM, you know, to young girls, but I bring the STEAM, you know, with promoting literacy and reading as well, and sharing the stories. And you know, what's really amazing is like, I can spot, so I go with a table full of books and I created a little bingo game to keep them like at the table. And they love the Aviatrix bingo, game. Cause I just spew all this history at them and they play with these little glitter airplanes to cover up the pictures. They love to play that stuff.
Yeah.
So it keeps them engaged. They have to look at the covers of the books to kind of guess who's who. And then they win a bracelet when they win. And so it's really fun when I'm standing in a hangar full of all this tech stuff, right? Like there's so many toys in here and you can see like the kids, they'll come in and some of them like just go right for the, you know, the engine or the jet or whatever. But there is a portion of the population that sees the books and you like, you can see it, like they're book nerds and they love, they come like do a beeline for my table and you could just see them like opening up the pages and looking at the books. And so that's the great thing is that there's so many ways to access the interests of children. And one of them is through stories. And so it's just another angle to kind of, I like to say, I want to infiltrate their brains.
Yeah.
And brainwash them and bring them in, you know?
Well, I think it's important too, because just if they, even if they don't end up being part of the, you know, aviation industry at large when they grow up, understanding that these stories out there exist. And if you learn it as a child, you're going to grow up with those, understandings.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's going to normalize it. And I think that's incredibly important.
That's what we got to do. Yeah. Yeah. People are always like, oh, well, the reason that we don't have so many women in aviation is because they don't want to, you know, they're just, girls are just aren't interested in, no, girls aren't interested in it because they aren't offered it as a choice. As
yes.
children. And so that's what we need to do.
You always hear, you can't be what you can't see.
Exactly.
And I believe that to a certain extent. I grew up as a girl in small town, Indiana, you know, mm-hmm. I did not see like women aviators. That was something I wanted to do. I knew it was kind of a possibility, but I never saw it. But it's not the seeing portion. It's the ability to understand how they got there so that I knew that I could get there. Even though I couldn't see it, I knew it existed. And, you know, it's like I needed the ability to see, okay, this is how they got to where they are, and I can do that same thing. And so I think that's kind of, I love that saying, but I think it needs to be altered just slightly of like, you can't be what you can't see the starting point of.
I have so much to say about that. So first of all, I became a pilot, or I wanted to become a pilot, because as a child, as a five-year-old, I wanted to be an astronaut. There were no women astronauts, so that wasn't limiting to me in any way. There were men, and right. I wanted to do what they were doing, and nobody told me any different.
Right.
And so, you know, once I figured out, or somebody told me very young that in order to be an astronaut, at the time it was true, you had to be a pilot first. And so that kind of became my singular focus. But I did get on board with this idea of like needing to see something to believe it for yourself. And my story is I was at a women's, it's the Sea Services Leadership Symposium. Is okay. that right?
I'm not sure, but yeah.
Oh, okay. So it still exists. You guys, we, the Women's Sea Services Leadership Symposium 1 year. And I was pregnant with my second child. I was at Air Station San Francisco and I went to the symposium. I think it was in DC, and I think she was in 06 at the time. So Captain Vivian Cray came to speak to us. And, you know, I admired all those senior women. You know, I was prior enlisted, and at the time I was like a lieutenant, but I didn't like really see, you know, I was lucky. I felt lucky to get to go to OCS and get to go to flight school. So that's like as far as I saw myself going, right? Couldn't really see any further than that. Do my 20 and get out and do whatever. But when she stood up and shared with that audience, she said, "My only regrets are that I waited 20 years to marry my flight school sweetheart." So she was seeing this guy in flight school and she didn't marry him until 20 years later, and that I didn't have children.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And when she said that, she became real to me, because I kind of saw those senior women as sort of married to the Coast Guard. And I was like, I have a family, I have kids, and so I don't see myself, you know, going that far. And when she said that, even though she hadn't done those things, it made her feel real to me, and it made me believe that maybe I could, you know, maybe that could be me. I didn't go that far, but I got farther than I thought I ever might, you know? And so now I'm a convert in that idea. And when I was deciding to what books to do, and I decided that I would ask the authors to do an interview with me, I agonized over whether I was going to do that for just audio like you guys are doing, or if I was going to do video too. And in my core, I knew it had to have video because of, you know, that experience and wanting people to actually see the person who's talking. But I was terrified. I was terrified enough just to hear my own voice recorded. Never mind have to see myself on video. You know, now 4 years later, I'm over it and I don't care anymore. But it was just a really big leap. It was terrifying for me to do that, but it's because
that's wonderful.
That
yeah. That's great. Yeah. I think it is incredibly important, especially with that diversity that is throughout the book club as well. I think it's very, very important. So
exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome. So, it's really cool to hear that when you, I'm sorry to use that phraseology,
cool, but
cool that you ended your career on such a high with being surrounded by women in these like high powered jobs.
Exactly.
Vice at the beginning of your career where that wasn't necessarily the case at all. No. And you probably felt a little bit pulled back mm-hmm. because of situations, honestly, outside of your control, and you weren't provided the same seat at the table. So yeah. That's really awesome that is the case. And hopefully we just continue in that same direction as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned like taking that and like that whole career that you just heard, and you can just think about like all of the skills that I developed. You know, I got to Harvard. I like to say that Harvard was the place that When I got there, it was like standing on a precipice and looking all around you could see mountains that represented the world's problems. And I have a lot of interests. Like when I went back and I got my bachelor's degree, finally, it took me a while to figure out what I wanted to study. Like I started at Embry-Riddle and I was like, you know what? I'm already a pilot. Like I already have a master's degree in aviation. Like why would I pay to study that in school? And so it took me a while. And I finally was so interested in the policies and the politics behind the rules that we were enforcing with Haiti and Cuba that I majored in international relations and political science. And so I was really interested in like that history. I was interested in national security, but being at Harvard made me really reflect on what did I care about the most? What was my circle of influence and where could I make the most impact? And as you know, that is women in aviation. And then I got to go from Harvard to OPM and actually have some influence over it, because at the time there was an appetite to support diversity initiatives. They had money to spend on it. And I was like, oh, let me help you spend that money and let's get some more of the Coast Guard going to the Women in Aviation International Conference. And oh, by the way, can we get some men to come so that they can, you know, and also can we get some flag officers to come so that they can see what our issues are and our voices can be heard? Because there's a lot more power in, you know, the collective being in the room together, like you guys have been here this week. It's so powerful. You know,
it is. It's been incredible to watch. I am so glad that we do have so many senior leaders that are willing to come to this conference, because I think even on our we had a junior enlisted and junior officer panel, and people ask like, okay, what are the challenges that you are currently seeing on your hangar deck? Yep. And they were willing to stand up and say, hey, here's the challenges that we have. Yeah. And we had soon to be 7-Eleven in the room, sitting there listening to a AMT 3 say, here's my challenges on the hangar deck. Here's what I would like to see. That's and insane. Here's my solution, but I'm also willing to hear all these other solutions as well. And so to have that power to be able to speak directly to, you know, 7-Eleven or directly to other commanding officers, I think is incredible. And so it is wonderful when you see those senior leaders really take the time to come to these conferences and one, invest in the mentoring session. So provide their cell phone number, provide time throughout their day to sit down and have one-on-one discussions, but then also to listen to these panels of say, here's the issues that we see across the Coast Guard. Here's what I'm personally seeing. And here's what I think can make it better, but also I'm willing to just ask for help and seek advice. And I think that's just one of the things that people don't realize happens at WAI. I think they think it's just a big party. I don't know, like it's a networking event, but they're not understanding the networking that we actually get are the day-to-day interactions that we have on the Coast Guard and the problems that we have and ways that we can fix them. And like somebody can raise their hand and say, hey, I had that problem. Here's what I did. And somebody else from a different unit can say, hey, we also had that problem. Here's what I did. And now you go home with two different solutions that you can implement and fit to your specific situation.
Yeah, there's so much there. I mean, you know, if you're serving at a unit with two or three other women, like that, you're just a small portion and you don't realize that there are other women out there that are dealing with the same things. And then coming here, that was the whole point, is giving us an opportunity to come together. There's a lot of healing that happens in sharing
for sure
with each other what you're experiencing, but then, okay, how do we fix it?
Yes.
And who do we get that information to? That's when Francis Massali and I were in the detailer shop and setting this whole thing up. That's what we wanted. And we wanted to legitimize it with structure. You know, you're not going to get orders to go party the whole time.
For sure. Yeah.
Not that doesn't happen, obviously.
Yes.
After last night, but you know, but, we're going to have some structured time. We were doing speed mentoring panels like you're talking about. And at the end, we were taking like the top three things that we thought the Coast Guard could fix and how to fix it and driving that up the chain so that, we could implement some meaningful change. And so for me, like when I walked into, I hadn't been to a conference in quite a while when I came 3 years ago. And when I saw you guys still doing the same things that Francis and I built all that time ago, it just validated all the work that we did, and it made me feel really proud and joyous for you that you still get to experience it.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. Glad.
And,
yeah.
And it's Cassie and who else? Michelle?
Michelle, yes. Michelle is,
shout
took the lead.
Shout out to those two for carrying the baton forward. And ladies, keep this going as long as you can, because it's incredible. I mean, look, there are 20%. I mean, like, I, what?
That's crazy. Yeah. And then also you see how many Coast Guard aviators are here.
Exactly. Like,
compared to all the other services, we're the smallest branch. And we all are the other services.
The Navy used to be the biggest one.
Really?
The Navy used to be huge here. And let me tell you something about the Navy that I have learned since I retired and reading all, like, I know we're like off on all these tangents, it's, but they're all so important. So the Navy women, they, Rosemary Mariner was one of their first six who winged. And they learned from the black men. They were mentored from the black men in the Navy about how to network and the power of networking and standing together to get change implemented. So you just, then, and I was at one of these other, it was that women's leadership symposium when I was in the detailer shop, and they were there in force, of course, and I crashed one of their meetings. So I was the only Coastie in the room. And they had admirals there, and they were doing, that's where I got the speed mentoring from. They were doing speed mentoring. And so I learned from them. I like spied on them and learned what they were doing. And I was like, we need to do this in the Coast Guard. This is what we need to be doing. And so y'all keep that going. Yeah. So we used to have like thousands of Navy women here, and now the Coast Guard is the best representation.
Yeah. We're the ones that like just really take off compared to all the other services.
I know.
So
I'm
it's
so
been
proud.
Great.
Good job, Coast Guard. Keep supporting this.
I know. Yeah. It's been fantastic. And that day before the event starts, just the Coast Guard day specifically, you don't see the other services doing that. And I think it's just incredibly important. And the amount of people we came that just came on permissive orders just to come to that day just really showed what a value it is for the yeah. Coast Guard and people in general. So
it makes me proud.
Yeah. Well, thank sure. you for, you know, starting it off for us so that, yeah. you know, years later we can still keep this going. Cause yeah. I do think it's incredibly important.
And
so.
Thanks to Frances too. She was here. I sat in on a talk that she did on behalf of Gulfstream, and here, I know Frances. So when you're in the detailer shop together, you go through some stuff together.
I believe
so
that.
You're doing time. So you get to know somebody really well. And what I loved watching her, just for anybody who knows her, they know Frances loves to fly. And so she is a test pilot at Gulfstream. And I saw her doing that presentation yesterday, and you should see her face. She's just like showing these little videos of the Gulfstream coming off the line. And she's just like, she's like a little kid. She loves it so much.
We
so.
All get very giddy around aviation here, especially. So it's a passion for a lot of us. But yeah.
So anyway, yeah. she and I were equal partners in that. And so we're really proud to see you guys continuing it.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, thank you for all you did to set this up so that we could keep it going. That's incredibly. And shout out to the WAI planning team currently. It takes a lot of work. It's a little village behind the scenes and they've all done an amazing job. So thank you guys for setting this up.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I think where I was going earlier with sort of like the Harvard story, and then later going to DIA for my training to become a diplomat. Mm-hmm. I learned so much there, and then being a detailer. So all of these skills that I learned along my 28-year career, I got to, first of all, really after I retired and go straight into COVID, like really reflect on what did I actually miss about the Coast Guard? You know, first of all, it was COVID and I'm a first responder and I'm like, can I do something? And then of course, no, I can't, you know, I'm gonna sit at home and everybody else is going to do stuff. But what I really missed was mentoring and networking and helping to nurture people, show them the potential that they might not see in themselves. Like I missed that kind of stuff. And that's what I needed in my life. And I liked networking people, you know, I learned that at Harvard. So I get to do all of that stuff in the role that I play right now. When I started the book club, you mentioned that I work with the authors. The authors in who write about women in aviation were not connected at all. And now I have the Aviatrix Writers Group has over 175 members.
Oh my goodness.
And while we're here, I am staying in a 12-bedroom house that is full of authors. I'm talking about like Navy jet pilots. The first Latina national aerobatic champion is staying there. Air Force, who else is, I mean, it's just mind blowing. The support network that we have, we're all sort of like cross promoting each other's work.
That's wonderful.
And that's just sort of the environment that I want for them. So yeah, it's, I get to do all the good stuff
that
I was doing in the Coast Guard. This project brings all that stuff together for me.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I think you're doing a wonderful job. Thank you for sitting down with me today. I really appreciate this. This has been great. Yes.
Yeah.
I was selfishly excited to get to like steal you over for an hour just to talk to you. And this has been wonderful. Well, so thank you.
Before we go, can you tell me what your goals are in the Coast Guard? I'm so curious.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am just finishing up my first tour here and I am moving on to Atlantic City.
Okay.
And so I'll be very excited about that. It was kind of all over my list on my dream sheet. I put every single job that I could have gotten there. Okay. And so when Meg called me and told me, she's like, "Hey, you're going to Atlantic City." I was like, "Oh, thank goodness." So I was like, "Good. Could you tell that I wanted to go there?" She's like, "Absolutely." So that was great. So I'll be heading there. So that'll be my next 4 years from there. And so I'm also looking to sit for IP. So hopefully that happens soon. I'm very excited about that. That's probably my biggest goal. Yeah. I would love to get to Mobile and be an instructor there.
Awesome.
So I'm looking at that hopefully next, if not a staff tour or postgraduate assignment in aviation safety as well. So
kind of
those two things that I'm all trying to balance all of those, but I'm very excited about it. So those are the goals.
Yeah. It's great to have goals and then keep your mind open to opportunities that might come your way.
Yes. I've never wanted to close off any doors. And so thankfully in the Coast Guard, I've been able to keep those all open and just, you know, kind of go for what I want. So it's been great.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I can't wait to track your career and stay in touch and learn all about that. So, hey everybody, I just want to encourage you to go check out the Literary Aviatrix website and check out my interviews, because I've interviewed some just amazing women in aviation and also some amazing authors who are not in aviation. I mean, I've had the opportunity to interview bestsellers. If you like to read, you will find something on the website, because there are books from all genres, all types of flying, for all ages, through all historical periods, fiction, nonfiction, everything is there. And if you want any recommendations, send me a note, follow me on, you know what? Hold on. I forgot to mention, I want to mention this. I don't have his note right now. So, in the background, one of my little side gigs is that, I learned how to do the social media with the Literary Aviatrix project. So I'm on Instagram and I'm on TikTok even, because I'm writing for young adults. So I had to be on TikTok too. And so I like trying to learn how to use all these things. And so one of the things that I do behind the scenes is I support the Coast Guard Aviation Association's social media account, mostly Instagram. So Sean Cross is on there posting our history every day, which is, they do a wonderful job of preserving the history of Coast Guard search and rescue operations. But they don't really post a lot of new stuff. And so what I do, shout out to all of the public affairs officers out there who are doing really fun, cool things on social media. You'll catch, if you go to the CGAA account on a weekend, you'll probably catch me sharing the stories from around the Coast Guard. So I'll go to everybody's posts and I'll share them as stories and have helped kind of grow that social media account. And the president of CGIA, somebody who I respect very much and who was a mentor of mine, is Captain Peter Trodson. And he just wanted to send a message to let everybody know that they really welcome everyone in all aspects of aviation, you know, and to join the organization and let them know what they can do to support you while you're on active duty.
Absolutely. And the Flight Suit Podcast has shared a few of those posts as well. So we'll make sure that we get all of the links and links to Literary Aviatrix, links to the Coast Guard Aviation Association. All of that will be in the episode notes at the bottom. And then also will be linked on our Instagram, which is at Flight Suit Friday. Make sure to give us a follow and then check out the notes for all of Mrs. Booker's information there. But thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, Miranda. Good luck to you.
Thank you. We say goodbye.